Hey, Darksiders. I hope you're all ready for another scammer tale, because this one comes with even more twists and turns than the ACE family. Okay, well, it's a close race, but the two are essentially playing different games to achieve the same results. Plus, we get to cover swatting for this one, and, well, that's always a treat. No matter how crazy or dangerous internet pranks become, there's always something worse around the corner. Today, we're learning about Ice Poseidon. He started off as a gamer, moved into IRL streaming, got swatted a ton, and then took up crypto scamming. And I'm here to tell you how. Oh, well, it probably goes without saying by now, but we're gonna be here for a minute. This guy still has over 700,000 subscribers, and he's been around for over 7 years. I suggest you grab the usual creature comforts and settle in. Go ahead, it's fine. I'll wait. Okay, you ready? Now let's take the dive. Before streaming, Paul Danino, better now known as Ice Poseidon, was born September 29, 1994, and he had a privileged childhood in Palm Beach, Florida. Before we get into his internet career, I want to touch on some key facts about his childhood, as it does add valuable insight into his overall character. For those of you that indulge in the dark side of gaming episodes, you'll be more than familiar with the world of old-school RuneScape. Its mechanics aren't particularly important for today's overall topic. It's simply an MMORPG that's been around the block. But it's also the game Paul sometimes played up to 18 hours a day. On these occasions, he would often wake early enough to play before school and resume playing the moment he returned home. Needless to say, he obviously didn't have much of a social life. He 100% fell into the introvert category. He uses the name Ice Poseidon because that is what RuneScape's random name generator gave him at the age of 12. So, not exactly an interesting story, but an origin story is an origin story, I suppose. In junior high, Paul was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome and given medication meant to sedate him. When recalling this time period, he expresses the drugs only made it worse, and he continued getting into trouble. Ultimately, Paul bounced from school to school and even spent time in a camp for troubled teens. One activity he was particularly fond of was making crank calls. But they came to a grinding halt when one of his RuneScape friends made a fake bomb threat to Paul's high school. Panicked, Ice hung up immediately, and the two boys believed the call to be anonymous, so they weren't actually worried. Well, that was until 6 o'clock the following morning when police raided Paul's home and took his computer as evidence. Luckily for him, they learned he wasn't the one who made the threat, and he was let off fairly easily. But the incident was a contributing factor to his punishment after later making sexual remarks to school staff members. Essentially, he was given an ultimatum: be expelled, or join the school's theater summer camp to build character. Obviously, he chose to join the camp, and while the amount of character built could be argued, Paul does say this is where he discovered his love for the stage. He quit taking his medication and got a job at Dunkin' Donuts. Though he didn't keep it for long, after graduating high school in 2012, he spent 2 years working towards a bachelor's in finance while cooking at a seafood restaurant called Chowderheads. And at age 20, he began losing interest in going to class. Though he did get his associate's degree, he was fired from Chowderheads soon after for leaving an oven on overnight. Next, he found work as a line cook for an Italian restaurant and received an internship at an investment banking company, all while playing insane amounts of RuneScape and screwing with other players for fun. In 2015, he started to post gaming clips to his favorite subreddit, and while he enjoyed what little attention they received, He didn't take it seriously until creating the closing doors prank. All he did was click on a door repeatedly to prevent another player from being able to open it, thus locking them inside of a room. The resulting video made it to the subreddit's front page and racked up a nice view count on his YouTube channel. Shortly after, he announced his intentions to begin streaming on Twitch. From RuneScape to IRL. Much of our first section will revolve around the events leading up to Paul's permanent ban from Twitch, but I do want to clarify that, as we just mentioned, Paul did technically start on YouTube first. He uploaded various RuneScape clips, but he didn't gain real attention until his streaming career officially began. The first night Paul streamed on Twitch, he had 10 viewers. The next night, he had 20. And yes, while it sounds like a slow start, he was doing well and genuinely enjoyed it. He dedicated massive amounts of time to playing and even put effort into setting himself apart from other streamers. In the beginning, he wore a suit and tie and only showed his torso. But this routine was short-lived. Eventually, he revealed the lower half of his face before dropping the gimmick altogether. Anyway, Paul earned roughly $100 or so in his first month of streaming, and somehow, this was enough to convince him it was time to quit his day jobs. I mean, it worked out, so I really can't say too much, but, wow. And sure enough, after three more months, he had over $4,000 in donations. Clickbait played a large part in bringing the viewers, but he seems to have gotten away with it. And he definitely wasn't the only streamer utilizing bogus titles. His fan base actually had quite the toxic reputation. Some have actually argued they were the most toxic out there. We'll be touching bases on them throughout the video, so this is probably a good time to start with the basics. Paul's community was named the Purple Army due to RuneScape's minimap. The dots representing other players are normally white, but the ones in your clan are purple. You can't look into this group and not see the letters CX everywhere. If you turn the letters 90 degrees with the X on top, it makes a smiley face. It quickly became a fan favorite. Way to spam other chats, especially when Paul began a stream. Or just to be trolls. Because from what I understand, or so the writer says, they're kind of mostly all trolls, I guess. Sunny V2 really said it best when he pointed out the fact that most streamers attract viewers with similar personality types. On several occasions, Paul clearly admits, and demonstrates, his love for screwing with others and being a genuinely pathological liar sometimes. Whether he's trolling RuneScape players or the general public, we see it time and time again. It's no surprise his community may have a higher than average troll ratio. An influx of new viewers came in after a particularly intense stream landed Paul on the front page of Twitch. Someone donated $10,000 worth of RuneScape currency, and Ice lost it all while staking. If you don't know what staking is, just think of it as RuneScape's version of gambling. You make a wager against another player, have a short turn-based battle, and winner takes the stakes. But against all odds, bit by bit, he won it all back. The boost in popularity gave Paul the confidence to branch out a little and try different games. But once he learned he could entertain viewers without the aid of RuneScape, he began trying different things, even cooking. Then the real game changer happened a few months later when Pokemon Go allowed him to take his audience into the real world. I know people do it all the time these days, but back in 2016, they really didn't. Ice was navigating uncharted territory, and he knew he was onto something big. For a short time, he was genuinely one of the most popular streamers on Twitch. The IRL streaming category literally didn't exist until he started doing it. Had he been allowed to continue on that path? Who knows what could have happened. The Purple Army loved seeing Paul interact with the public and knowing anything could happen. The people he interacted with might be funny, mean, kind. There really was no telling. The not knowing added an element to streaming that no one had realized was missing. Even the great Mr. Beast's early content was noticeably inspired by Ice's work. His early innovation and understanding of what an audience wants, combined with his extravagant personality, made a genuine impact on the culture as a whole. That's why, with Paul's normally lighthearted and comedic atmosphere, it was a surprise to his growing audience when he began a serious stream. He cried to the camera and shared some pretty intense feelings with his audience, expressing feelings of an underlying sadness that he'd always carried, including his struggles over not having any friends. There was no one he could talk to in real life. He didn't even speak with his parents, and they lived together. It was a genuine moment of vulnerability. A few assholes mocked him for what they saw as weakness, but most flocked to show their support, as they should. It's not surprising that many of Paul's viewers strongly identified with his struggle. To be fair, it's a pretty common issue for introverts, but remember, kids, regardless of how you may feel towards someone, their mental health is never a reason to criticize. Sniping and swatting. Okay, time for the sniping and swatting chapter. Well, it's more of a the problems with IRL streaming kind of thing, but sniping and swatting sounds a little cooler, and I mean, they really are the bulk of it, so. Except for the Andes. There's going to be a lot about them, too. But this section was too hard to separate timeline-wise. Though, before we begin, I want to make one thing perfectly clear, because I know a few of you tend to get a little overzealous. And don't get me wrong, I love that about you. But sometimes boundaries actually are important. I might make a few light, inappropriate jokes along the way sometimes, but some of these are serious issues. Swatting is especially dangerous. It's against the law. It's gotten innocent people killed, and it's destroyed countless lives. Do not do it. Please. Okay, I'm glad that's over. Let's go. IRL streaming isn't all sunshine and rainbows. The text-to-speech donations can be pretty cringe in public, but they're actually minor issues compared to the rest. Viewers enjoyed sending sometimes racist, violent, and often sexual messages in order to shock the people around ICE or purely to get him banned. And it worked. This resulted in his first two temporary bans, with a third coming shortly after when he accidentally leaked a girl's personal phone number on stream. Though to be fair, he paid her $500 as compensation, and it sounds like she was pretty cool about it. Supposedly only three viewers called, so that was actually pretty chill considering the Purple Army's reputation. Unfortunately, that didn't matter to Twitch, and Paul still received a month-long ban, during which he had plenty of time to do some soul-searching. This is when he moved to LA, and his career really began taking off. Within the first few months, he had a manager and made friends with other streamers, including Andy Milanakis, who became fairly important to Paul's early success. Andy's a funny guy. If you're a millennial, you might remember him from MTV. He had his own show with a theme song that you either found extremely catchy, or you wanted to stick a screwdriver in your ear. Personally, the writer apparently was a screwdriver chick myself, and I don't remember it, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. Most of you probably never heard of him, or you simply know him as a successful Twitch streamer. And that's, honestly, all you need. Either way, Paul and Andy collaborated often enough for ICE's fans to create a running joke around his name when a stream sniper, also called Andy, decided to make himself a regular fixture in Paul's content. In order to tell the two apart, the sniper, or more accurately, the stalker, was dubbed, quote, Mexican Andy. Though I probably should have defined what stream sniping actually is. First, that's when a viewer discerns the streamer's location and stops by for a visit. Most creators find it annoying, but Paul seemed to enjoy and encourage it. He sometimes even invited random strangers to join him. It's important to remember that although some may appear to be enjoying themselves, you never really know how they feel. Especially when their livelihood revolves around you watching their content. I'm just saying, don't put too much stock into on-camera personalities. I feel like some people might need to hear that a little more than others. Aside from obvious potential dangers, snipers were more of a free content situation for Ice. Many would come to collect clout on his stream, but none stood above the crowd better than those given the name Andy. Mexican Andy in particular was a special brand of awkward and real. He not only went out of his way to find Ice every day, but he also stayed for the entire stream and often showed up at Paul's home. Yeah, that's right. I said his home. I specifically waited for this moment to drop the most horrifying piece of information in this entire case. So, prepare yourselves. After moving to LA, Ice began an open-door policy with his fans. The door was always unlocked. They could stop by anytime, and oh boy, did they. Seriously, can you imagine? How is this dude still alive? Only in LA, I swear to God. I mean, anywhere else, man, just fuck. But yeah, somehow this is just an FYI for a couple side stories and not really a key piece of information to be saved for his murder chapter. So here it is. Anyway, now for Mexican Andy. Ice had this very unusual guy following him around and randomly showing up at his apartment. Andy was an extremely awkward guy, and the Purple Army found him as annoying as Paul did. His main entertainment value was being someone who could stay calm under heavy verbal abuse. But as the persistent little man persevered through embarrassment after embarrassment, the frigid purple nurples began to thaw, and in turn, so did Ice. By the end of it, Mexican Andy would become a streamer in his own right. He wouldn't have a happy ending. Apparently, he enjoys harassing women. But this isn't about him. It's about Paul. So we won't dive into that tonight. I mean, that kind of says it all anyway, but if you need more, he also uploaded his own cringe compilations. Really, the takeaway here is how he affected Paul's streams. As Mexican Andy's popularity grew, the stream ultimately began to dub all snipers Andy. They had, quote, Arab Andy, Burger Andy, Sitting Andy, Vegan Andy, Minnesota Andy, and, well, plenty more. But the other Andy I want to draw your attention to is, quote, Asian Andy. Asian Andy stood out from the others. He didn't purposely wander by Ice's stream and pretend it was an accident. Instead, fate was sort of on his side. His original plan was to use his drone to deliver a bucket of chicken to Paul, but before he had the opportunity, he happened to run into Paul by chance. Ice's phone had died, and he was in desperate need of a ride home. Luckily, Asian Andy also happened to be an Uber driver and happily offered his assistance. He seemed like a genuinely nice guy who simply wanted to meet an idol. Eventually, he became inspired to try his own stream, and though he struggled at first, he actually found a little success in the IRL category. He mostly did minor challenges and allowed the text-to-speech donations to play well in public, but his genuine awkward personality helped him defy the odds to become an actual success. He would still participate in various events thrown by Ice, but he ended up being a legitimate streamer in his own right. I watched a few clips, and while there's definitely an audience for his kind of content, if you aren't a fan of cringe comedy, I don't think it's the channel for you. Regardless, I encourage you to take a look. It's always best to formulate your own opinions with first-hand experience. Some of his videos got so wild they were banned from YouTube. A birthday party where he can be seen walking around in a Speedo that was deemed particularly saucy. But his last upload was 8 months ago, and I can't find anything about why he quit. Of course, these were nothing compared to the guy in camo walking around with a shotgun. That guy began his own live stream while he hunted for Ice Poseidon. Like, as in a literal hunt. The guy's title was, quote, "I'm going to kill ICE." And he was supposedly looking for Paul while he was in the middle of his own stream. The Purple Army warned their liege, but somehow, Paul felt obligated to keep his stream going, despite his very real, very legitimate fear of the crazed man. He briefly discusses the incident in a May documentary, stating he suffered from PTSD and an extreme fear of being shot since the experience. He also found it especially disturbing to know certain viewers would simply be amused by his murder. No more, no less. But enough about that. It's time for the Mac Daddy of them all. Swatting. It's an activity in which those of the general fuckboy variety think it's humorous to call 911 with fake emergencies. By knowing a streamer's location, anyone can pick up a phone and claim just about anything they want to. Whether they say the streamer has hostages in their basement or a bomb on the streets, it's gonna get police out there fast. And the cops are never happy when they get there. Something about the power to interrupt a stream with thousands of viewers is irresistible to trolls. It's like their own customized drug to fill every sick need they need to crave. It grants them the attention, while also allowing them to directly affect the streamer on a physical and emotional level. Not only has the creator's content been majorly altered, it can be a traumatizing experience in general, especially if it happens in their home. And sometimes, the cops can be, well, a little bit of an asshole. If you search for swatting videos, you'll see a wide variety of police reactions. Some are kind, but even when they know it's a fake call, they still have to carry through with protocol and do the full sweep. I can see how that would get old when your profession revolves around actual life and death situations. But even when you're innocent, one can't help being a little shaken, or worse. Regardless of what physically happens, the trolls typically live for the reaction. They feed off of the ability to incite emotions within a public figure, and if they can't elicit them in a good way, they'll enjoy anger, defeat, and fear just as much. You never know what will set them off, and they could flip the switch before you realize that they even exist. The only way to defeat these guys is by having no reaction. But that's never really been Paul's forte. Yes, swatting was semi-big for a minute, and it happened to a lot of popular streamers, but nobody got swatted like Paul. There's no contest. At this point in the timeline, he would have only been swatted in his apartment, but at one point, he would be swatted almost every day for over a year. Once, when police were sent to his home multiple times in a single day, he asked why they were still coming if they knew it was fake. They didn't have a choice. They were required to follow protocol for each occasion. It didn't matter where he was, his home, the streets, or a hotel. They'd get him. And why? Because he didn't ignore the trolls. Not only did he continue recording through each police interaction, he made jokes and dedicated entire videos to the topic. Then, other times, he would blatantly tell the viewers his location as if challenging them to try. That is how he screwed himself at the airport. For the record, he would eventually make a statement saying he wasn't going to make content with the swattings anymore, but then he spent 10 minutes begging the swatters to stop. That never plays well. Again, most of the people who would do this in the first place are inherently not the type of people who care if you're crying uncle. Still, swatting aside, he was doing really well for himself by 2017. He may have had smaller controversies, but they were just a plus for his audience. It was the perfect balance for his style. He even began dating a popular Twitch streamer, Haley Atasudo, and overall, it just seemed like he was meant to live the LA life. Everything was turning up aces, and Paul's channel continued to thrive. But then he booked a flight to the DreamHack convention, and on April 27th, Paul made the mistake of leaking his gate number on stream and saying, I'm not sure telling you guys this is a good idea, but what can you possibly do? Right? Wasn't the first time he gave out such information, but this time, a viewer, pretending to be ICE and spoofing his number, claimed he had a bomb in his bag. In the middle of the Austin to LA flight, the plane was diverted to a Phoenix airport, where they were then parked away from the gate and told to remain seated. The pilot then announced they were stopped for technical difficulties and asked passengers to pull the shades over their windows. That's when law enforcement boarded through the back of the aircraft. ICE and the woman he was with were then identified, removed, searched, and interrogated. The incident made national headlines, and the next day, Twitch chose to cut ties with the streamer rather than endure further bad press. Paul was officially permabanned, which not only meant that he could never stream on Twitch again, it meant other streamers couldn't feature him on theirs either. Though the two always remained on good terms, this effectively ended his relationship with Andy Milonakis. Fans and other streamers alike were outraged over what they felt to be unfair punishment. While it was clearly a mistake to announce his location, it's not as if he called in the bomb threat himself. Over the years, there have been a few occasions where he attempted to make amends with Twitch, and sometimes those efforts have come fairly close. There are even recent articles claiming his return is upon us, but honestly, you never know with that guy. For me, I think it's possible, but I'll believe it when I see it. YouTube Live. Shortly after his Twitch ban, ICE moved his streams to YouTube. He announced the switch in a video discussing his plans to discuss further new live stream capabilities with YouTube representatives. And then, he not so subtly declared war on Twitch. He wanted to be known as the flame that finally ignited the spark of rebellion against the evil Twitch overlords. But, as you all know, Twitch may be struggling lately, but it's still hanging in there. Either way, Paul did very well on YouTube, even if he paid a high price for success. He quickly realized he'd need a gimmick if he wanted to keep his audience interested. And that is how he came up with the concept to let his viewers control his actions. Whether voting on his subreddit or deciding in real time, he let them control his every move, even which girls dated. And his sub count seemed to rise with every choice. For the most part, he really stuck with their ruling early on, but he did eventually get called out for a few things. One of the first, or maybe the first viewer's choice, was a vote between two women. Geisha, the model and beauty queen, or Haley, a fellow RuneScape streamer he had a clear connection with. Even though Paul confessed to have clear feelings for Haley, his viewers chose Geisha, and he followed their lead. Soon after, Haley would address the incident on her own stream, where she discussed her relationship with Paul, including the night that she spent talking with him while he contemplated ending his life. She felt he threw her under the bus when his viewers were allowed to choose between the two women, and she seemed especially upset when Paul proposed the possibility of having a relationship with her off-stream while feigning one with Geisha on-stream. Like, pretty much any woman would be upset. Obviously, Geisha would learn of all of these things and more. Such as the night Haley spent with Paul after he claimed she wasn't there. Afterwards, Paul had another heart-to-heart with his viewers, and life moved on to his next love interest, Carolyn. She too came with her own drama, as she had an ex-boyfriend who stirred things up by revealing Carolyn was still living with him at the time of her first date with Paul. Overall, the Purple Army was not a fan of this chick, but they did seem to enjoy the chaos that she created. They were like an overprotective big brother. It was totally fine if they made ICE miserable, but they refused to tolerate a toxic, cheating girlfriend to do the same. It's almost sweet in a kind of dark way, but, you know, that's kind of what we do here, so I guess it's fine. Paul has often admitted to being a liar, But his fans really never gave him too much trouble over it until November of 2017, when Carolyn's car was supposedly stolen. The police were called and the stream continued as they reported the theft, but later, there were suspicions the incident was staged. Much like the drama surrounding the ACE family break-in, it was highly suspected these policemen were merely actors. Not only were there notable differences in the men's uniforms, they were in an actual police cruiser, not an undercover vehicle. Yet it had no identifying markers. Eventually, it reached a point where Carolyn couldn't be seen or mentioned without an onslaught of hate following. And finally, on January 4th of 2018, Paul broke up with her. The Purple Army was in full approval. They would have recognized it as a national holiday. The only small percentage who didn't approve weren't against the thoughts of losing Carolyn. They were merely skeptical of Paul's claim. With his reputation for lying, some thought it might be a little too good to be true. He addressed this issue on stream the following day, and his main argument against it revolved around how much trouble he'd be in if he got caught faking a breakup. He speculated it would end his career, and it was simply too big of a risk to take. You see where this is going? I bet you think it's fake. But it's not. It was totally real for about 3 days, but when they reconciled, he simply didn't tell his audience. Surprisingly, he managed to keep the secret for 5 whole months, though. To be honest, it's a lot longer than I would have guessed. He probably would have made it even longer, but 5 months later is when ICE went on a 14-person road trip across the East Coast. Later, in that May documentary I mentioned, he discusses how he specifically chose the people he knew would create the most drama. He compared it to making reality TV, which, to be fair, is exactly what he was doing. He chose people who hated each other and put people in awkward situations, even somehow creating a situation where he was supposedly sleeping with another guy's wife while the husband filmed it. to be honest, it was incredibly awkward. When ICE is left alone with the woman, the stream is carried outside where another guy watches them through a window and proceeds to describe what's happening. During the second week, the drama got started for real when a girl by the name of Kay Bubbles uploaded a short video stating Paul and Carolyn were still together, and he had been in an open relationship for months. This nugget of information led to Paul admitting he had been sleeping with both women and didn't think it was a big deal. Unfortunately for him, his fans thought it was a real big deal. Things escalated when Carolyn later appeared on the stream while the group was stopped at a resort. Sick of Paul's on-stream flirting, Carolyn slapped Kay, and the stream turned into a screaming match. Ultimately, the group was asked to leave the resort, and ICE was the only one with permission to stay, since his was the only name on the room. His community was accustomed to not only knowing what went on in Paul's private life, but actively being part of his decision-making process. Being lied to for months on end was devastating, especially when it concerned a subject they were so passionately against. In an attempt to quell outrage, he treated Carolyn like garbage on the stream and tried to make her leave. They provided a soap opera quality breakup for the remainder of the stream, and Carolyn held her ground longer than most would have with a camera shoved in their face. But in the end, they were really, actually broken up this time. Later, Paul had another serious stream where he addressed why he felt the need to lie about his situation. The community was so happy with their breakup, he couldn't bring himself to admit he loved her. When they first got back together, it was with the understanding she would have to remain hidden and, should she ever show herself, he would be forced to immediately break up with her, which is exactly what he did. Granted, it would be difficult to tell thousands of people that you love someone they hate, but he sort of put his own self in that position, so make of it what you will. Paul would later try to rekindle things with Carolyn once more, give or take about 5 months after the fact, but she'd already moved on. He too found a new girl soon after, but his fans were still angry, and it was beginning to show in his subreddit, as well as his analytics. A break from streaming. By February of 2019, Ice Poseidon's subreddit had devolved into such madness, he deleted it entirely. With the Purple Army turned against him and his view count down the drain, Paul decided it was time to take a break. He wasn't making as much money as he'd hoped, and his personal life was 1x away from becoming a Greek tragedy. And his mental health was plummeting faster than his sub count. He had no privacy, no time off. Fuck, it's no wonder he needed a break. In August, he tried out streaming on Microsoft's Mixer platform, and he actually did pretty well there. He came back better than ever with a new good guy persona, behaved himself, played some games, and focused on looking good to the Twitch gods. For a change, he genuinely wasn't bothering anyone. Might have been exactly what he needed if Mixer hadn't shut down the following year. He didn't officially announce his break from the Purple Army until May of 2020, when he uploaded a clip stating he was done with its toxic environment. He was starting over. For most people, this wouldn't have been possible. But you have to remember Ice Poseidon is practically the father of IRL streaming in a way, so many other creators grew up watching him and got their own start from the inspiration he provided. He's always going to hold a special place in their hearts. Even when he does something completely unforgivable, they can't quite bring themselves to hate him. We're finally almost to that part, but first, I have one more thing I want to mention. Now, I want to tell you guys about another big Twitch streamer, Carl Jacobs. Once upon a time, he used to be a fan of Ice Poseidon's and even made a short appearance on one of his streams while at a public event. Unfortunately, this randomly became a problem for no reason, and Carl's fans were out for blood. Cancel culture is bad enough during this time, but this community was essentially their breeding ground. One photo of Ice and Carl together was all it took to start drama. Now, I don't know if any of this until researching it or anything, like, wasn't a big thing I knew about, but it's the last section I looked into, so honestly, I had no clue what I was getting into, but whatever, I expected it, so. Look, this was absolutely pointless, even more so than Creepshow Arts drama. Viewers were posting the picture of the two streamers with captions reading, "Carl supported racists," and all the usual, like, huge cancel culture bait. Many creators in his shoes may have simply brushed off such a small issue or simply pointed out that the photo was several years old. But not this kid. His response was, let's say it was a little extra. He went on stream rather than making an impersonal tweet, and it felt like he was genuinely afraid of his audience. Like a teenager who knows he got caught for sneaking out, but knows that they still have to face the music. It takes the kid 5 minutes just to explain why he felt the need to address the issue on stream. And while I have no prior experience to compare his behavior to, I mean, I struggle to describe him as anything less than terrified. He did nothing to organize his thoughts beforehand, and ultimately spent too much time stuttering through a few simple sentences. It's called scripting, folks. I mean, I really can't say it enough. Carl didn't even participate in any of the drama Ice was in hot water for. That, by the way, had nothing to do with being racist or homophobic. The fact that Carl's hands are shaking throughout the attempt to apologize for something he didn't do is the perfect example of what cancel culture can do to creators, especially younger crowd and the kids. He wanted to say something along the lines of, "Yeah, I watched Ice Poseidon when he was on Twitch, and I don't endorse some of the behavior he displayed in the past, but shit, that was years ago." Well, when he failed to express that sentiment through the stream, he decided to make a long tweet, which still fell short of the mark, but the point to this is really about timing. Since his break with the Purple Army, Paul came back better than ever, with his good guy persona. Again, he behaved himself, played games, all that stuff. The drama with Carl couldn't have happened at a worse time. There was simply no reason for it. I mean, sure, most assume Paul's act was mostly an attempt to get back on Twitch, but they didn't know that for a fact. Yet, Carl threw Ice under the bus just because he was frightened of his viewers. And that didn't play well to the streamer community. As they tend to do, several videos addressing the topic began to pop up. I think I introduced you guys to Keemstar on the ACE Family episode. He featured Paul in a Drama Alert upload to discuss the topic. And while they agree Carl isn't necessarily a bad guy, they feel he was being a coward. His apology validated the audience's negative beliefs about Paul and ultimately sent a fresh flood of hate his way. Of course, all of this quickly becomes moot when Paul scams his fans for $500,000. CX Coin. Now, with all the scams we've covered now, I'm not really sure if we've ever touched on cryptocurrency. I don't know, sometimes they all just seem to blend together, but either way, we're making up for it now. Bear with me because I only just learned this myself, but in an attempt to explain it a little more simplistically, this scheme is when an influencer promotes a new cryptocurrency, like Dogecoin, you know, the thing with the dog. They get all their fans to buy into it. The supporters then exchange real, hard-earned money for digital currency in the hopes that one day it'll be worth more than what they paid. That means their fans are now investors. And the money they're investing all goes into an account called a liquidity pool, meaning the coins are only worth the cash they have backing them. Does that make sense? I hope it does. You know, I've never been fantastic at explaining, white-collar-style crimes. Or math, for that matter. My brain finds it difficult to process the lack of violence. The point is, you eventually have hundreds of thousands of dollars, sometimes even millions, sitting in an account. And at any time, the owner of said account could, theoretically, always withdraw the money and leave your investment worthless. When the cash is suddenly and without warning ripped away from investors, it's called pulling the rug. Without the liquidity pool, there's really no way to refund anyone's money. It's not like these are rich businessmen who take these risks for a living either. I mean, these are average middle-class people who just made the mistake of misplacing their trust. I can't quite figure out why anybody still buys into it, but Ice Poseidon decided he'd like to make a quick buck too. And that is how he and a team of developers came up with CX Coins in July of 2021. Paul originally got into cryptocurrency, or as he calls it, shitcoin, by investing money into other people's crypto. But he soon noticed this was less of a gamble and more of a scam. When first learning how the system worked, he proudly joked about draining the liquidity pool if he were selling his own shitcoin. Granted, this genuinely seemed like a joke, and it was probably made long before he conceived the notion of actually making his own. But the fact that he did say it, and more than once, I mean, you know, come on, I mean, called it, right? On a different podcast, he made jokes about scamming his fans, stating, quote, "If there's $1 million in the wallet, I'm taking that million." Obviously, when the guy who joked about scamming investors then began seeking investors, people are automatically going to be suspicious. Save the Kids was another shitcoin scam that happened roughly a month into the Ice Poseidon working on CX Coins thing. And it just so happened to be run by one of his close friends. Paul acknowledged that this was yet another red flag and went out of his way to reassure the skeptics that it was the very reason for his transparency. He advertised the project as, quote, long-term, and described it as if something were genuinely passionate about? I don't know. I mean, it's that for rather than a way to make money? I don't know. For those unfamiliar with CoffeeZilla, he's one of the best internet detectives in the business, and exposing these kinds of scams is pretty much what he does. Paul knew this and preemptively reached out to him and other similar channels in order to put investors at ease and avoid negative articles. He even claimed he couldn't pull the rug if he wanted to, because the money was tied up in a smart contract, thus preventing his access entirely unless pre-agreed conditions were met. Additionally, he gave CoffeeZilla his crypto wallet addresses so that he could check in whenever he wanted to. And for the most part, it worked. Bigger things were going on in the world. And Ice had been so upfront that everybody decided to give him the benefit of the doubt. There would be an occasional complaint or suspicion, but each time, Paul immediately replied to the concern and always seemed to give a satisfactory explanation. Until January 31st of 2022, when CoffeeZilla decided to go back through those wallets and learned that they did not include Paul's personal wallet. He'd sent the wrong ones. This was automatically a huge red flag, and soon it would be apparent it was no mistake. $300,000 had indeed been withdrawn from Liquidity, and it wasn't the first time. $200,000 was withdrawn even earlier in the project. CoffeeZilla uploaded a video exposing Ice Poseidon, which includes clips from an interview conducted after the money was taken, but the full conversation is also available in a separate upload. And it's a must-watch if you decide to look into this one further. For the duration of this interview, I want you to keep one thought firmly at the forefront of your mind. At any time, Paul could put the money back. One deposit would make his fans whole again, but instead, he was real blunt and honest, outright admitting, quote, "I'm gonna look out for myself and not do that." Most of these people couldn't afford to invest at all, but someone they trusted, someone they have a borderline unhealthy parasocial relationship with, said they could be rich. Many of his younger fans haven't yet learned the concept of if it's too good to be true, it probably is, and they bet more than they could afford to lose. What seemed like an easy payday for Ice Poseidon turned into years of trust issues for some of his fans. You may think Paul would run from CoffeeZilla in an interview, deny the accusations, or even lessen his role in the scam. But he didn't. He was very open about the situation and answered every question posed. That's not to say he admitted the coin was a scam. He could never quite bring himself to go that far. He was more comfortable sharing the blame with his supporters, often reiterating, quote, "They bear some of the responsibility for leaving their money in there." Oh, but I'm getting ahead of myself. One of the things I respect most about CoffeeZilla is that he doesn't try to be a hard ass for shock value. He treats everyone with respect, tries to have a calm, productive conversation, and if he can't help resolve a problem, he at least tries to learn from it. When beginning his conversation with Paul, he bluntly states, as if to appear Ice has pulled the rug, to which Ice responds he hasn't. A rug pulling would constitute taking all of the liquidity, but there's still $42,000 remaining for investors to sell their coin back. When asked to give a reason, Paul essentially says the crypto market is crashing, and he wasn't going to, quote, "let $300,000 go to waste." He felt it best to pull the money out before it was gone. If you feel confused by that response, you're not alone. Playing dumb is a scammer's favorite tool, but CoffeeZilla was not having any of it. They only argued the concept of basic math for a moment before changing the topic to discuss Paul's original intention. Despite having advertised CX Coin as a long-term project, he hadn't worked on it in several months by this point, and he argued that his inactivity should have been enough for investors to understand he was no longer pursuing his endeavor. Therefore, anyone who still had their money invested must not care if they lose it. I mean, there's denial, but then there's, like, denial, you know? When asked point blank if he considered this a scam, Ice doubled down, stating the coin, quote, "had no trade value, it's inactive," because he didn't want to do it anymore. CoffeeZilla points out that fans were waiting on an official update due to the many times Paul advertised this as a long-term project and promised to bring other influencers on board. They gave him the benefit of a doubt, but now he'd completely violated their trust, exactly as everyone feared. Ice repeatedly clarifies it was not a scam because he did have good intentions when releasing the coin. Unfortunately, investments are gambles, and though he really did try, this one just didn't work out. Combined with the bad publicity attached to the project from day one, Paul simply didn't want anything to do with it anymore. It feels like this might be one of those situations where he's lying to himself more than he's lying to the world, but I don't know. We're all broken little souls. Who am I to judge? Coffeezilla gently points out that there were several problems with Paul's platform and strategy from the very beginning. Yet he did nothing to fix the issues or make use of the marketing wallets. As far as trying goes, he kinda didn't. And even worse, the bad publicity stemmed from the jokes he'd made about stealing everybody's money. Then he actually stole their money. So that's gonna look terrible no matter how you say it. I mean, words can only do so much. Paul seems extremely dedicated to naming the coin's inactivity as the reason he took the money, as if it would have otherwise just vanished. But the only reason the coin can be called inactive is because he stopped working on it in the first place. By believing any logical person would know the project is inactive, quote, he created a situation that allowed his mind to ethically take the cash, or so he thought. When asked why he didn't tell investors this news, Paul once again explained he hadn't worked on it in so long that such things were self-explanatory. Yeah, it kind of feels like he's saying, well, it's their fault they got scammed. That's because he is. He repeatedly denies the fact that he is saying it, but then says it again with slightly different wording. Paul likes to focus on the $42,000 left in liquidity, but it's impossible to ignore the fact that that's barely 10% of the funds, especially when he's still in possession of the remaining 90. Coffeezilla asks him to return the money, even reminding Ice that he only invested $50,000. But that does nothing to sway Paul's mind. First and foremost, he's looking out for himself. By this point, we're almost 20 minutes into a 33-minute-long conversation, and it's actually pretty painful to hear it go in circles after the third time. Both sides are stating the same information, worded slightly differently, but it's not going anywhere. Eventually, Coffeezilla asks Paul to stop pretending he doesn't understand how liquidity works and suggests he puts back the $300,000 temporarily, just until investors can sell their coin. Then, Paul can withdraw what's left. Obviously, both parties understood that there'd be nothing left, but Paul can't admit this without actually admitting that everything was a scam. It's genuinely mind-blowing as to how somebody can be so honest, yet so dishonest, at the same time. It's like he's acknowledging he got caught red-handed and he still thinks he can make it sound innocent or, at the very least, ignorant. Finally, Coffeezilla point-blank tells him, I want you to admit it was a scam. But Paul's reply is simply, I'm not going to say it was a scam because that just wasn't the intention from the beginning. Shortly after, he states his intention was to, quote, not fuck people over, before repeating, quote, there come certain points in your life where you have to look out for yourself and weigh the options. When asked what the actual options were, Paul explained he could either leave the money in there or take some of the money. The idea of telling investors it was over and recommending they sell their coins apparently never occurred to him. Coffeezilla mentioned this idea, and Paul merely reverted back to insisting investors still could sell because he so graciously left $42,000 in the liquidity. When he finally does acknowledge not everyone could sell, he says it's because there's not much money invested into the coin. As if he weren't in the middle of a discussion revolving around how that's only true because he took $300,000. Realizing this conversation is indeed going nowhere, Coffeezilla switches gears and tries to salvage his time by learning what he can from the situation. When asked how much he made from the scam as a whole, Paul openly admits he kept 55%, while his developers received 45%, which came to be roughly $300,000 for 2 weeks worth of work. Ice then says he plans to invest the money into crypto and Ethereum. I can't really help finding the answer, comically ironic, but to each their own. I'm sure he understands how to recognize a scam when he sees it. When asked if he believed the FBI or SEC should get involved with cases like this, Paul quickly answered in the negative. But I wonder if his opinion will shift if he ever finds himself on the other end of things. As the call finally winds to a close and Coffeezilla is still calling it a scam, Paul complains he's focusing on the negative and asks that he at least mention some of the positives, too. What positives, you ask? Well, apparently. When the coin was first released, there were scam coins using the same name as his, and ICE still honored their purchases. He estimates up to $30,000 to $40,000 worth and felt like he was just trying to help people. But at a certain point, you can't help everyone. I'm not sure if there's actually any truth to what he's saying there, but if there is, I imagine he did it because he already knew he was going to pull the rug for a much larger payday. Either way, the look on CoffeeZilla's face as he said that it was skeptical, to say the least. According to the interview conducted in a May documentary, ICE has pledged to refund $150,000 of the investors' money, which is really only $110,000 when you hear that they're counting the $40,000 he originally left in the wallet, but I haven't seen anything regarding his actual fulfillment of said pledge. Conclusion. Overall, Paul is far from the worst we've discussed, but stories like his are kind of a tragedy in their own right. His struggle is one we can all understand on an intimate level. How many of us are all too aware of what it feels like to feel alone? How many could really turn away from life-changing amounts of money? And how many could simply hand it back once we actually did have it? The life of a successful streamer gave Paul many things, but it also took away many things. I mean, can you really put a price on love? What if Haley was the girl for him and he blew it on a career entertaining a community that could never truly love him the way that he was really craving most? Well, too fucking bad, am I right? Welcome to the real world. For real, though, it really is a tragic tale when you think about it. We can probably file this under yet another what if for a world where mental illness was actually taken seriously for once. And honestly, I think that's the most fucked part of it, is that we wind up and find ourselves in constant situations where we have to face the day-to-day of reality, whether we have mental health things that we're dealing with or not. But if we can take just a minute to think about the other person at the end of the line, maybe we can start making small differences in at least our lives or maybe somebody else's. Well, guys, I'm tired and I'm out of here. If you want more, June the King actually has a great video that covers Ice Poseidon's early years, and it's definitely where I recommend starting. If you want to see Paul's swatting clips rolled into one convenient video, Sunny V2's channel is the place for you. And Jay Aubrey has a great video while the Dexerto Originals documentary was released last May. Well, that thing will give you the best overall bang for your technically free buck. But there's plenty more, and you know where to go. So, go nuts. With that said, Darksiders, we are ending another episode of The Dark Side of YouTube. I'm your host, Autumn Ivy, and as always, don't do anything I wouldn't do.